Have you ever seen something that just really caught your attention? Maybe for some, it's a Friday and you see a yard sale sign. You see the yard sale sign and you must turn aside to see what just might be there. For the fishermen, maybe it's a lake or a pond that you see. I've known of some people who always keep a fishing pole in their vehicle. And if they're driving along and they see a body of water, there's a good chance that they're going to turn aside and stop and see if there just might be a big fish in there. Maybe for some it's a clothing store or a restaurant or a car show or a sunrise or a sunset. But something that you see and it just really catches your attention. In the verses that we just read together, Moses sees something that really gets his attention. And he turns aside to see this great sight. There's a bush that is burning, but it's not really burning. It's not burning up. It's not consumed. There's fire. It's burning, but he sees there's something different about this. He was a shepherd. He was outside. You imagine he's probably seen quite a bit in the outdoors during his time. And yet there was something about this bush that was different, that made him take notice of it. And that's what we're going to be thinking about together this morning, is those verses that typically we refer to as the burning bush. For some reason, these are among those verses that it seems we put in the kids' classes. We think of this as a, quote, children's story, along with things like Noah or David and Goliath, Samson. We tend, it seems, to think of this as one of those things that we talk to the kids about. But then as adults, how often do we revisit Exodus 3, the burning bush? And so this morning we're going to be thinking about the bush that burned, but it didn't burn up. It wasn't consumed. And as is the case with so much of the scriptures, there's something here that we're supposed to understand about who God is. And that's the perspective that we're going to look at this from this morning, is what is Moses supposed to learn about who God is? There's some things Moses needed to know, and then some things that we need to know those same things. So that's what we're going to look at. But before we get into thinking about what Moses needed to know that we also need to know, when we stop and think about fire in Exodus, Leviticus, Deuteronomy, this scene of the burning bush is kind of looking ahead to the way that God's presence is going to be seen among the people. So, for example, when we get into Exodus 19 in verse 18, now Mount Sinai was all in smoke because the Lord descended upon it in fire. And its smoke ascended like the smoke of a furnace, and the entire mountain quaked violently. And then again in Exodus 24 and verse 17, and to the eyes of the sons of Israel, the appearance of the glory of the Lord was like a consuming fire on the mountaintop. We can even understand Nadab and Abihu in Leviticus 10. Within this idea of fire and the presence of the Lord as fire. They, if we remember that, have offered strange fire, it says. And fire came out from the presence of the Lord and consumed them. And they died before the Lord. And then again in Deuteronomy 4, 11 and 12. You came forward and stood at the foot of the mountain. And the mountain was burning with fire to the heart of the heavens. darkness, cloud, and thick gloom. Then the Lord spoke to you from the midst of the fire. You heard the sound of words, but you saw no form. There was only a voice. So all these occasions throughout Exodus, Leviticus, Deuteronomy, of the presence of God being associated with fire. And we see it here in Exodus 3. Moses here is being commissioned to be the one to lead the people out of Egypt. And he sees a burning bush. God's presence being associated with fire. And so as we think this morning about what does Moses need to know? Moses is going to, he's about to have a great task that's given to him. And next week we're going to look a little more at the conversation that ensues. But Moses is about to have this great task that's assigned to him. And he needs to know some things about who God is. He needs to be assured of some things. And so too for us. We need to know who God is. There's four things in these 10 verses that I want us to consider this morning. Four things about who God is. Things that Moses needed to know, but things that we today need to know as well. So let's look at these four things that we see about God at the burning bush. The first of those is that God knows us. God knows us. If we look at verse 4, when the Lord saw that he, Moses, turned aside to look, God called to him from the midst of the bush and said, "Moses, Moses." And he said, "Here I am." Notice that God doesn't say to him, "Hey, you over there, what's your name? Who are you? Yeah, you by the..." Moses, Moses. God knows who Moses is. God knows the plans that he has in store for Moses. We probably have all had those times in our life where we see somebody and we kind of recognize the person. We think we've met them before, but there's kind of that awkward time of you don't really remember their name and you're trying to figure out who it might be, where you recognize them from. We do that with people. We do that with people that maybe we don't know all that well. God doesn't do that with us. God doesn't look at us and say, I think I know who you are, but I'm just not really sure about it. I don't remember your name. God knows us. And we see that from this verse. Moses, Moses. And he said, "Here I am." This actually happens a few times throughout the Old Testament. We won't take the time to look at all of those, but this sort of a thing occurring. God says to Abraham, "Abraham, Abraham." And Abraham said, "Here I am." God calls to Jacob, "Jacob, Jacob." And Jacob says, "Here I am." And these verses are meant to link into that. Moses is going to have a part in this story. Moses, Moses, here I am. God knows his people. God knows the nation of Israel. But God also knows them individually. God knows Moses. And God knows you and me. We read in Matthew chapter 10, verses 29 through 31, "Are not two sparrows sold for a copper coin, and not one of them falls to the ground apart from your Father's will? But the very hairs of your head are all numbered. Do not fear, therefore. You are of more value than many sparrows. The very hairs of your head are all numbered, it says. God knows us. And we see that at the burning bush. Moses, Moses. And God not only knows Moses, God knows us. He knows me, He knows you. What a wonderful thought that is, that the Creator of all the universe knows me by name. Knows where I am. Knows what's going on in my life. And so we see that God knows us. A second thing that Moses learns that we need to know as well is that God is to be regarded as holy. If we go on to verse 5, then he said, "Do not come near here. Remove your sandals from your feet. For the place on which you are standing is holy ground." He's told to not come near. Don't get any closer. And he's also told to take his sandals off. Which in those times was a custom of honor and of respect, of reverence. God is associated with this place. God's presence is in this place. And so there's honor, there's respect that goes along with that. And still in some cultures today, taking your shoes off is a sign of honor, of respect. Maybe the closest parallel for us in our times is you think about going over to somebody's house. And for some reason, your shoes or your boots are muddy. You might take those off at the front door because you don't want to be tracking mud through the house. It's a sign of honor, of respect to that person and to that home. Well, in these times, to remove the shoes, the sandals, is a sign of honor, of respect. God is to be regarded as holy, is really the point of this. The presence of God is associated with this place. And so as such, treat it as holy. Honor it, respect it. Revere it. God is to be regarded as holy. And that's something that Moses is to learn, is to understand. That this God, the true God, is a holy God. And we see this throughout, being emphasized in the Old Testament, throughout Leviticus, throughout the law, that God is a holy God. He's to be honored. He's to be revered. And similarly, or going along with that, the people are to conduct themselves in a certain way. If they are the people of this holy God, then their conduct is to be different. Their character is to be different. They can't say that they serve the one true God and then just live any way that they want to. If they honor the holy God, then they're to be holy in their conduct. And that's not just for the people of the Old Testament. That's applied to those in the New Testament as well, to the church. Peter, writing to the early Christians that he writes to in 1 Peter chapter 1, verses 15 and 16. "But as he who called you is holy, you also be holy in all your conduct, because it is written, 'Be holy, for I am holy.'" This is written to the church, and it says, "The one who called you is holy. So you be holy in your conduct." So Moses, at the burning bush, we see that God knows him. God is to be regarded as holy. A third thing we see is that God is the God of history, the God of promises. He goes on in verse 6, and he said, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. Then Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look at God. This is connecting this with the book of Genesis. Moses is a part of this story, a part of the history of his people. When God says, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, of Isaac, of Jacob. Moses, to a great extent, has grown up around the Egyptians, the Egyptian culture. He's also gone to Midian. But in a sense here, he's being connected to his history, to his heritage. And as readers of the Bible, this is meant to make us realize that the story of Genesis continues. God is at work to carry out these promises. Moses is told, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, of Isaac, and of Jacob. It's interesting that in the New Testament, Jesus quotes this verse. Jesus speaks of this verse. It's in Matthew 22, verses 31 and 32, where he says, But concerning the resurrection of the dead, have you not read what was spoken to you by God, saying, I am the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. That's Exodus 3 and verse 6. God is not the God of the dead, but of the living. Somehow, this verse that we have back in Exodus is being connected with resurrection. He says, have you not read this? And he quotes from Exodus chapter 3, from the burning bush. And there's some different thoughts about how is this a resurrection passage? How is Moses being told this at the burning bush? How is this about resurrection? And there's some different thoughts about that, but I think one thing to consider is that God's people are about to be given new life. They're going to come out of Egypt. God's word is going to be fulfilled. Do we really stop and think about how God, who we are worshiping this morning, who we sing to, who we pray to, is the God of Abraham? The same God who came to Abraham and made promises to Abraham, that's the same God that we worship today. And the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob, the God of Moses, the one Jesus spoke of. Maybe at times we're guilty of thinking about the Bible as so far removed from us. Things that happened in a faraway land long, long ago. Maybe we don't take to heart, this is the same God that we serve. The God of history, the God of promises. The God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. That's the God who knows us by name. So we see that God knows us. God's to be regarded as holy. This God is the God of history, of promises, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And then the fourth thing this morning that Moses needed to realize, and I think that we also need to realize, is that this God sees us. That He knows what's going on with us. This is the fourth thing that God says. He speaks four times in these verses, and this is the fourth one. And the Lord said, I have surely seen the oppression of my people who are in Egypt, and have heard their cry because of their taskmasters, for I know their sorrows. So I have come down to deliver them out of the hand of the Egyptians, and to bring them up from that land to a good and large land, to a land flowing with milk and honey, to the place of the Canaanites and the Hittites and the Amorites and the Perizzites and the Hivites and the Jebusites. Now therefore, behold, the cry of the children of Israel has come to me, and I have also seen the oppression with which the Egyptians oppressed them. Come now, therefore, and I will send you to Pharaoh, that you may bring my people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt. Twice God says, I have seen the oppression. I have seen. I know what's going on. I'm aware of this. One aspect of verses like this is that it's intended to contrast God with the false gods, with idols. The people so often in a time of oppression, in a time of difficulty, were tempted to look to the idols. Well, an idol can't see. An idol doesn't know. An idol isn't really going to do anything at all to help. How often might we also, during our time of difficulty, turn to something that it doesn't see, it doesn't know, it's not going to help? God is here saying, I have seen. I've seen what you're going through. And so too it is for us that God sees. We are not slaves in Egypt. But we all have something. And the older I get, the more I realize that everybody has something. And God sees. God knows. Even if all of us don't necessarily know or see. We're not all knowing. We're not all seeing. But God is. And God sees and God knows. He knows our difficulties. He knows our struggles. He knows our hurts. Moses is about to be commissioned with this great task. And he sees the burning bush. And he says, I'll turn aside and see this. This bush that burns and yet it's not consumed. And after this, we know Moses' life is not going to be the same. And before the book of Exodus continues to move forward, there's some things about God that Moses needed to know and realize. God knows him. God is to be regarded as holy. This is the God of his father, of his ancestors. And God sees what the people are going through. And those are things that we today, we need to realize as well. It's so often the case that God uses something that seems really small, insignificant, just an everyday thing. Think about this shepherd out there, and it's a bush, a burning bush. All through the scripture, God is using things that are just common, everyday, humble things. And we see that so much in the life of Jesus. One who lived a life of lowliness, of humility, of simplicity in many ways. And ultimately, as we've talked before on other occasions, the coming out of Egypt really looks forward to the captivity that we are to come out of, our coming out of sin. And if you are here this morning and you need to come out of that captivity, you need to pass through the waters of baptism and have new life, confessing your belief, repenting, being baptized, and living that new life. If we can help you with that, we would love to. Or if you're here and there's something else that we can assist you with, you have this time now to make that known. So if we can help, please let it be known as we stand and sing.